Our final case of the day, State on behalf of Carter W. versus Anthony W. State on behalf of Carter W. versus Anthony W. Good morning. Ready when you are.
Members of the panel, my name is Jerry Soucy. I'm the attorney for the appellant, Cynthia H. I hope to get through without using the last name. This is a matter involving a paternity determination in which, after a period of time in which, in order to pay child support, Anthony sought change of custody, the matter came in for a hearing before Judge Burns. There was a hearing on temporary custody. Judge Burns entered a order dividing it 50-50 in legal custody shared. Hearing was held, and he essentially continued that order. The significance on this case relates to the method of communications ordered between the parties, which was a contentious relationship between the two. Judge Burns ordered that the communications be by one text message per day and a communication book to be passed back and forth once a week between the parties. That has remained in existence to the present time.
I agree with you that as to the method that the judge required the communication to take place, but wasn't there evidence that as far as getting along, they could do so as far as the child was concerned?
That's a tough question, Judge, because we're now a year and a half after that took place and the evidence was presented anyway. And the relationship has not gotten better. It still continues the way it is.
But we can't consider that.
I understand.
I understood from the record that he testified that he thought things were going pretty well as far as doing what was best for the child. They were communicating to some extent for that matter. While they may not agree on other things,
but the interesting thing about that was the requirement was whenever there was a disagreement, there was a mediation. And the mediation just would never work out. It was a strange process that went through that entire period of time. Cynthia attempted repeatedly to comply with the restrictions regarding the relationship that was supposed to happen, and it was always missing. Sometimes until the day before the hearing. And so that was the track record of what was going on. I'm aware of the panel, and I think I need to address it as a decision. At least two of the panel members were on in Ray. And I'm aware of that case. And I think the significance of this case from a policy consideration is whether or not that case was, however you describe it, the ceiling of the floor. Was it an outlier? Was it unusual because of the rather protracted and extended history of hearings coming into court? I don't remember. It was at least more than four times they'd gone in, attempting to get modifications. And I understand, actually it involved Judge Burns as well, I understand his frustration when people are using the courts in that particular manner. Policy problem I have with this particular case is whether this is going to become the default case in every single custody case, because that's what happened in this case. When Anthony walked in and filed his motion, Judge Burns' default position was joint custody, period, no hearing. We were criticized roundly by Judge Burns for even having attempted to present evidence at that hearing. Well, it turned out the evidence that we had presented at that temporary hearing regarding the alcohol abuse that was observed in regards to Anthony turned out to be true, not based on anything that we did, but based on his own conduct. Everything that we get criticized by the appellee in this particular are things that Anthony did to himself. We didn't do any of that. Cynthia didn't do anything. He didn't take into the bar. She didn't run into the bar. She didn't lose her job. He didn't move to multiple residences. That was all on him. And I'm really concerned, I was never concerned about this case until most recently, in terms of whether this will then become the default position case for all cases going forward, that if you simply file, you get 50-50 joint custody right out of the box. And then what happens is if you comply with the order and do what you're ordered to do, you don't risk contempt, you then have said, oh, you've gotten along, everything's fine. If that's the case, then forget hearings, forget evidence, forget the behaviors of the relative parties, forget the evidence that gets presented, and just say right out of the box, everybody gets 50-50, and barring registered sex offender or something, that's the way it's going to be. But that's not what the legislature said. That's not what this court, it's not what the appellate courts have said going back forever regarding joint custody determinations. They are not the norm. They are the exception. And they become exceptions because some people get along just fine. Some people do better in divorce than they did when they were together. I know a number of cases like that. And so, if you have to make a decision, then you have to weigh the relative parenting skills, life skills of the two individuals. And in this particular case, Cynthia, compared to Anthony, I don't think it's a tough call. And if that's the case, and you say, okay, Cynthia, you have primary custody, then the district judge is tied into the criteria set by the district court rule. And we were more than willing to expand on that, necessary. But that's not where it went. That's not what happened. This particular case, I think, is one in which the court really needs to consider whether this is a default under which that's the case, then you're going to change the divorce practice all across the state versus when there is a situation involving people who, based on one member's performance, is in this particular case, I don't think you can say that Cynthia needs to forget the infidelity, forget all the things that have happened, all the things that were told to him. She just needs to suck it up and not have that be a factor in terms of her communication skills. She needs to sever that relationship. But somebody needs to make the decisions regarding schooling. Somebody needs to be there during the school week consistently. You cannot, as this child goes into school, have the notion that you can switch from one parent to the other back and forth regarding homework assignments, field trips, all of those kinds of things that are normal in a child's school raising environment, and say that can be handled by communication based on text messages, one a day.
When our standard of review is abuse of discretion, and I see situations where parents cannot communicate effectively about major life decisions. They can't usually communicate effectively about what day it is. We had a case yesterday in Norfolk where two people couldn't agree where a child was going to go to kindergarten. And we see a district court judge who fashions a parenting plan utilizing the communication method that the parties prefer and is attempting to try to do what's best in the interest of the child. So at this point, how do you say that was an abuse of discretion?
Because he applied the wrong standard. That's the point. The point is, it's not the preferred standard. If the judge needs to put in his order that joint custody is not the normal method of determining custody, and needs to be the exceptional case. The problem is that the judge employed the wrong standard. That's a question of law. That's a question of law. had he applied the correct standard, my position is that he would have reached a different result. And so that's how we brought this report. We didn't bring it on abuses. We brought it primarily on the question, on the issue that he used the wrong standard. And if the court is of a mind that joint custody as a default method in every case, for the majority of cases, then that district judge is wrong. He's wrong as a matter of law. He's not wrong. I mean, it's not a question of whether he abuses his discretion after he makes that finding.
So are you saying the wrong standard is using joint custody as the default?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's not in the statute. That's not what the statute says. And it requires much more than just the judge saying, I'm going to appoint at the beginning of this process custody, and we go from there.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
How long did we take, Mr. Susie, over?
17 seconds.
17 seconds. Would you add that, please, to Ms. Campbell's? Campbell's?
Good morning, may I please support?
Good morning.
My name is Lindsay Campbell. I am the attorney for the... I would like to start out by reminding the court that if you review the record, there was no default finding. Custody would be the custody arrangement for these parents. Anthony had filed a motion for temporary custody in which he was requesting joint custody. It was heard on affidavits, and it was actually heard by Judge Chevron. At that time, Judge Chevron was presented evidence on affidavits that parties had in fact been following a legal off schedule for several months. That hearing would have taken place in about October, November of 2013, and they had started doing a week on week on April. Judge Burns then heard the case on evidence in the courtroom after Cynthia had expressed a desire to have the actual sitting judge hear the case. At that time, Judge Burns had been out for a back surgery. Judge Chevron had heard that initial motion. Judge Chevron had agreed that if the parties wanted Judge Burns to hear it, he would set time on Judge Burns' calendar for an evidentiary hearing, where each side had a half an hour to present evidence. And that is not customary in the county to do that, but they did that in this case at the request. The hearing was held, evidence was presented, and at that time, Judge Burns did enter an order of custody. It was not a default order that he simply entered without hearing any evidence or without considering the evidence presented by the parties.
And was one of the reasons the inability of the parties to communicate effectively?
That was one of the reasons that was discussed at the hearing. Anthony had that he did not believe there was as much difficulty as Cynthia had said. Cynthia expressed that she did not agree that their communication had been what she wanted, but I do not believe the record reflects that at any point it was issues that they could not get past. They were able to decide where he would go to preschool. They've since been able to decide where he would go to school. They had no issues deciding his doctor. There were no issues on religion. In fact, both parents agreed that he should attend a religious faith. There were no issues of major... The only issue that they seemed to disagree on was what parenting time should look like going forward. I also think that it is incorrect to state that Anthony came to a change of custody. There had never been a custody determination prior to his complaint. There had been a finding of paternity and a child support order that was entered, but at no time was custody awarded to Cynthia. When Anthony came in at that point, there had been several months of equal shared parenting time, and he was simply requesting that continue. On order it would not. There was evidence at that temporary hearing that they could get along at that time, and based on that, Judge Burns did enter that default or that joint custody order. They did mediate, and in fact, one of the exhibits attached to that final order is a mediated parent. It shows that the parties were able to agree on certain times, things of that nature, transportation, and that sort of thing. So there really is not much evidence in the way of their inability to communicate when it. In fact, they were already. There was a case that we cited in our brief, Ebrim versus Ebrim, where the court held that present behavior is more significant than old behavior. We're looking at the best interest of the child. Much of the life skills that Cynthia has concerns about regarding Anthony occurred several months or even years prior to the trial in this matter. And his behavior leading up to the trial is actually exemplary. He was not drinking. He testified that there was no alcohol used at all by him. He had entered a very serious relationship, signed an 18-month on a home, indicating that he was not going to be moving anytime soon. And there was no evidence that the child was doing poorly based on that schedule. It's been 3 years since that began informally in April 2013. We've yet to hear anything about the child who's been harmed by this schedule. And there's no evidence to show that Anthony has been inconsistent in the weeks that he's had him. No evidence that he has been unable to help him with school, with homework, with doctor's appointments, illnesses, anything of that nature. If Cynthia were to decide later that she had evidence that it was not going well, she could certainly file a complaint to modify at that time. But at this point, there has been no evidence of that. After the court found that joint custody was appropriate, they did that based on a hearing in open court. The statute says that the court can order joint custody after hearing in open court if it is in the child's best interest. Following the district court rule that is cited in the appellant's brief would require the court to ignore the party's mediated holidays. It would require the court to ignore the evidence it heard regarding the joint custody and best interest of the child. And it would ask the court to then make a finding that was in fact not in the best interest. I would remind the court that at the end of the day, this is based on the best interests of the child. And we have to keep in mind that this child is only, at this point, he lived with both parents for a considerable amount of time when he was born. There was a short period of time after the parties had split that he was seeing his father at the whim of his visits. Then beginning in April of 2013, the parties agreed mutually that it would start. And that's how it has been. For half of this child's lifetime, he's had the grown off with his parents. He has every reason to want to be with his father and his mother, and it is absolutely in his best interest that he have that equal time as he's had most of his life.
Excuse me, Counselor, did you say that was since April of 2013?
Yes, Your Honor. That was the time the parties had agreed that at least going forward for a while, they were going to try leave on the arrangement. That was still occurring in September of 2013. He decided that he wanted to file something to make sure that that continued permanently. At that point, he also was advised and became aware that he was paying child support on a sole custody basis. And because he was helping provide for the child on a week-by-week basis, he was not in a financial position to continue to do that and wanted to revisit it. Money was not at all a motivating factor for him in this case, and I believe that the evidence collected to show that that was not his main issue. It was just a side issue that needed to be addressed at the same time that we were in court getting this finalized. And in addition, the parties needed a holiday plan that they could rely on and fall back on, and so it just made sense for Anthony to go in and ask for something to be made as part of the permanent.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Mr. Susie's out of time, I believe. Yes. So the case is submitted and counsel is excused. That concludes our March panel. Thank you.